clear and concise. This is the Jason Burma Show on today's News Talk TNT.
And ding dong, the witch is dead. We talked about it really briefly yesterday, but Neom's The Line Project is officially defunct. And we talk a lot about negative stories here or pushing things in the wrong direction. When something so bad goes so horrifically awry in the face of the billionaire, the globalist class, I can't help but smile. In fact, to me, this is the feel-good story of 2024 so far. Why? Because utopias do not exist. In fact, unfortunately, the world we live in is ever more dystopic. And the more and more that is being revealed around the failure of this project that was literally going to put you in some type of a virtual wonderverse under the guise that you would own nothing and be super duper happy about it, is the fact that the technology doesn't even exist to support the city they were trying to build. It was a heap piled full of hot, stinky Johnny nonsense. Period. Amen. And this needs to be emphasized. Now, I want to talk about utopias for a minute, because I truly believe that each of us individually, to some extent, through the power of what? Our free thought, our free will, can in fact create very, very utopian lives by ourselves. You know, first of all, set your expectations. What's really important to you, right? Are you somebody who's obsessed with things and status and how other people look at you? Well, I got news for you. No matter how high you climb, no matter how much stuff you get, chances are you're never going to be happy at all, not even a little bit. And when you look at a lot of people that have a lot of wealth, have achieved certain things, they're constantly depressed. They're constantly unhappy. Do you think somebody, for instance, that goes under the knife 24 times in their life, not because they're sick, not because they got in a car accident, because they don't like the way they look, you think that's a happy person? No, 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 no. And the political class, especially those that would try to gain power through ideological beliefs, have always kind of played on the idea that you're oppressed and you can't have anything. And look, there are levels to that. I'm not going to lie. There are certain places where I'm never going to be able to go geopolitically or socioeconomically. At the same time, my own little private Idaho here in Iowa is more than enough for this guy. I've got a pretty large house. My nieces are taken care of with their bedrooms upstairs. They're both in sports. Me and the dog took a walk today, even had enough time to give him a bath. That's the Zootopia I can get behind, not some kind of woke ideology Pixar / Disney creation where they let you know that a little itty bitty bunny in a city full of much bigger animals can do anything and be anything she wants. By the way, I actually liked that movie. But when you look at the overtones of that, it's presenting a non-possibility. It's presenting a utopia. And it's not just the media. It's not just the current political class. We have to understand that constantly our society has been barraged with this idea that a utopia for all is just around the corner. Never happened before in human civilization. Not expecting it to happen now, but they sell you on a bunch of bad ideas based in bad rhetoric. What do I mean by that? Well, the class of people that were my parents and their parents, they were constantly promised that the new robotics and the computers that we've seen over the last 30 years, well, they were going to cause an abundance, and that group of people was going to be working 30-hour work weeks, and everybody was going to have more. The complete inverse happened. Back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you could be one person, the head of the household, have a wife, have three kids, have two cars, own your home, and maybe have a 10 to 20 year mortgage. Not anymore. Now, both parents work almost a full-time job if one doesn't have two jobs. You're struggling to make your car payments that you don't own, that you lease, and you might never own that house. And when you do, those property taxes might be too much. Just the world we live in. That's the reality. Not a utopia or a dystopia, but more and more promises that never come to fruition. But I promise you this, you will not be sorry. If you start following TNT across social media, that's where you'll know where to find Jason Burmis and other great shows across the network. So give us a follow over on Instagram, X, Facebook, Getter, Gab, you name it. And if you can, if independent media is important to you, please make that donation. That is not only how we survive, it's how we thrive in this information-deprived wonderverse that we're all living in. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with Adam Ruckus.
It's the stuff.
It's that division
people are talking about.
And that cluelessness that they want to push.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
On Wednesday, a group of conservative lawmakers defeated an effort by House Speaker Mike Johnson to hold a vote on funding for the FISA Surveillance Act, which is set to expire soon. Here with the story, joining us now is TNT News producer Adam, a.k.a. Ruckus Clark. Bringing that ruckus. Adam, what's the story here?
Hey, Jason, who doesn't like FISA? Raise your hand. Yeah, this is something that's been, excuse me, bad timing there.
Don't you go dying on me, Adam. We need you to talk FISA.
We got to talk about the FISA. So this is actually something that just recently became like a hot button issue just because Trump became a victim of FISA. Otherwise, I think nobody would even know what the heck it is, to be completely honest with you. I'm happy to see this in a way. And we have some, they're coming across the aisle to join hands and fight against a controversial thing. This does have to do with privacy concerns and all of that fun stuff. So we have a group of House Republicans who voted alongside the Democrats on Wednesday afternoon in order to derail this legislation that was designed to reauthorize the FISA, that's the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and address longstanding concerns over mass surveillance. Over a dozen Republican lawmakers joined with Democrats to tank the Reforming Intelligence and Securing America Act, a bill that would reauthorize FISA Section 702 for 5 years and institute a series of reforms to mitigate perceived abuses by the intelligence community. This vote comes after months of debate over two separate bipartisan FISA authorization proposals in the House Intelligence Committee and Judiciary Committee. Respectively, the bill proposed by the Judiciary Committee would have required a search warrant to conduct FISA searches on American citizens, which was the key difference between the two packages. Now, three staunch conservatives, Representatives Matt Gaetz, these are all Republicans, Anna Paulina Luna and Tim Burchett, these are all, from Florida and Tennessee, respectively. They came out against the legislation earlier on Wednesday, leading the Republican opposition. Additionally, probably most notably, former President Donald Trump has spoken out against the FISA reauthorization ahead of the procedural vote and claimed, as I mentioned earlier, it was used to spy on him, particularly his presidential campaign. He took to his Truth Social just yesterday morning and did his all caps lock thing where he said, quote, "Kill FISA. It was illegally used against me and many others. They spied on my campaign!" Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. End quote. He was likely referring to the FBI's discredited crossfire hurricane investigation of Russian collusion claims based on the debunked Steele dossier. And unless you live under a rock, you're aware of all this by now. Special Counsel John Durham found that the FISA authorization process was abused during the investigation in order to spy on former Trump advisor Carter Page, despite the lack of evidence against him and factual errors on the FISA applications. A coalition of hardline conservatives and progressives have objected to the warrantless monitoring of American citizens made possible by loopholes in FISA Section 702. which ostensibly was a law crafted to enable intelligence officials to conduct warrantless surveillance on foreign threats. House Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican from Louisiana, urged Republicans to get behind the FISA authorization bill, despite his agreement with Trump on the intelligence community's past FISA abuses. And then it gets interesting, Jason. Johnson brought up the fact and noted that the Trump administration used FISA to help kill terrorists and touted the accountability measures in the legislative package. So we got a little tit for tat going on with the Republicans over this one, my friend. But it looks like for now it's on hold. I think it's due to expire April 19th. So that's coming up real soon. And unless Congress does something, it might just go away. But we'll see. What do you think?
I don't think it's going anywhere. I think that even if we get to the 19th, I think we'd be fooling ourselves to believe that some kind of policy is going to be changed. I think that the fact that they're talking about reform is probably still bad news, Brown, because what? This keeps it in place. I think Mike Johnson is a hack. I'm sorry. He was never a good pick for Speaker of the House. He's proven himself to not only be a hack, but an establishment guy. Let's be honest about it. When we talk about the FISA warrant system in general, it reminds me a lot of what's going on with TikTok right now. And what do I mean by that? Well, you mentioned Crossfire Hurricane and the Trump administration and the fact that Russia was used for this secret warrant to spy on his campaign. And then in unison, the media and the press completely denied it. One of my favorite interviews with Trump is Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes, where Trump's like, "They spied on my campaign, Leslie." And she's like, No, this is 60 Minutes, sir. We have integrity in our news. We have to know what we're saying." He's like, "Leslie, it's proven." No. I played it 100 times. Someone needs to remix it into an auto-tuned rap song because it's that ridiculous, okay? They absolutely spied on this campaign. But it's not bad to point out that his administration abused it too. That's why these tools should not be in the hands of any of these people. And quite frankly, again, I've said it before, even without FISA, they're spying on you. It's a track trace database society. It was one pre-9/11. It got worse post-9/11. They used that event to fast track things like the Patriot Act that had been written well before, to put in Deutschland security, which they had planned for a long time before, not so popular. Military Commissions Act, NDAA, fusion centers, ultimately signature reduction. We haven't even gotten into the three-letter agencies from the FBI, CIA, to the NSA. So I think we're fooling ourselves to think that there's a win coming on this issue. At the same time, the more that we can shine light on the darkness that this is a corrupt organization, should not exist. And just like with TikTok, it's going to be used selectively, enforced selectively, what to wage lawfare against anybody that goes against the quote unquote great narrative. So I think that this whole story is ultimately dangerous. And I think there's a lot of red herrings in there as to where it's going, whether it passes through or April 19th comes around, Adam, and it's gone, baby, gone.
Yeah, plus also, Trump might be trying to score a win where he's like, "I'm the guy who killed FISA. Love me, worship me, adore me." There's always that angle too. And then, of course, they could implement something completely new. I mean, nothing that these people do, they can't try to redo or do something different with the stroke of a pen when they want to. I mean, don't listen to Biden. He says, I wish there was something I could do to close the border. What could it be?" Tapping himself on the forehead with that same pen that he liked to use all the time. So, yeah, I don't trust them. I don't trust Trump that he really, doesn't want FISA. And let's not forget the big collaborators. None of this is possible without the likes of Google and other big tech platforms, the cellular carriers and providers and all of that. Without them, this information, the data collected from millions of American citizens courtesy of Section 702 of the 1978 FISA thing would not be possible. Oh, by the way, they keep that on file for 5 years in case you didn't know.
And again, you just need to look to Hepting versus ATT to understand in the late 90s, all telecommunication companies had a separate room where what all information was split off into a server that went directly to the National Security Agency. And again, even then, they were using what? Keyword software such as Carnivore and later Promise to make detections of all the baddies out there. We could talk about all that stuff in depth. We're going to have Adam back next hour. We're going to go to break, but we are going to be talking 9/11 with 911pilots.org. You're not going to want to miss it. More TNT Radio after this.
TNT's Jason Olborn.
Former Liberal Democrat Senator David Leinhelm, who was the first Liberal Democrat Senator, he wrote a book on gun control a couple of years ago. And I would have to say, from an Australian perspective, it is the definitive book on the subject. And we're going to talk about that in line with another pressing thing that happened for us here in Australia just a week or so ago, with the digital ID bill being passed in the Senate in its first reading as opposed to the House of Representatives, and leading to many people saying that in Australia it may be that this push is on because we don't have access to arms. It's an interesting argument, isn't it? And what I noticed was that it was coming not only from Australian social media, but also from people in the United States, where there's been this pressure ongoing for gun control in that country.
Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
It's been said that when someone you love has Parkinson's, you have Parkinson's. The truth is, Parkinson's disease doesn't just affect the diagnosed. It affects everyone who supports and helps care for them. Worldwide, over 10 million people are living with Parkinson's, a neurological disease that affects movement. And with so many places to search for information, it can be difficult to know where to begin. The Parkinson's Foundation has answers. Answers for everyone in the fight. We can help you understand the disease, help you find expert care, give you tips for living a better life, share the latest research, help you find local support, and there's a free helpline you can call. Find your answers and join us in the fight against Parkinson's. To learn more, please go to parkinson.org or call 1-800-4PD-INFO. The Parkinson's Foundation. Better lives together.
People might tell you that Lyme doesn't kill people, but we are losing people. People disappear from their lives.
One of the scariest things that I had to deal with was memory loss. Not just like I don't remember what I did last week, but like I forgot all the words to my own songs. I remember going to my primary care physician and he was like, "You are 100% healthy. There's nothing wrong with you." And my response was, "That's impossible. I'm dying."
I wasn't working. So I had all of these hospital bills. We had to move out of our home and move into my parents' basement.
I just wish I could have truly been present in those big moments, you know, when she took her first steps or, you know, her first day of preschool. Lyme is such a thief and it goes undetected because no one is looking for it.
For more information and prevention tips, go to projectlyme.org.
My baby's back from the West Coast.
Hear those pictures that you asked for your school project? First day of school, cute as a button.
So long ago.
Oh, here's Grandma Florence after that flood wiped out the whole neighborhood.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Ah, those beans smell heavenly.
Give Mama a little credit.
You know what? We should make an emergency communication plan. That way we're ready this year.
Oh, great idea.
At my dorm, we have emergency kits for earthquakes and wildfires, but I'm sure there's something more local I can send you with the link.
Okay.
Smart.
I'm coming to share with you guys.
Protect your legacy. Plan for natural disasters today. Visit ready.gov/plan.
The Net Zero Con will leave millions of citizens dependent on state handouts.
It isn't a theory.
It's an agenda. There is no climate emergency. On air 24/7. This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we are back. We are joined by Captain Dan Hanley and Captain Doug Green of 911pilots.org. Gentlemen, I don't understand what the deal is. I thought we had Muslims with box cutters, bad guys, end of story. That's the deal. Let's not question anything. What caused each of you one at a time to question this and really give us a background prior to questioning 9/11? Doug, let's start with you.
Okay. Well, first of all, Jason, thanks for having Dan and I on the show. Both Dan and I have a significant experience in the airline industry. Personally, I was an air traffic controller one time years ago for the FAA, and then I got into aviation as a military pilot, retired after 22 years of service. And then contemporaneously, I worked for the airline industry for a number of years, still actively involved in the airline industry as a 777 captain working overseas because I got forced out of my own country. And I was actually flying the day on 9/11, and then the Boeing 747 going to Alaska. And I could hear through the one of the aircraft's radios called the non-directional beacon. I tuned in a radio station, and I could hear what sounded like an Orwellian story of what was actually taking place at the time. And after watching it on TV and just viewing this incident, you know, it was virtually impossible to believe the false narrative was true. And so then over the course of time, after more research, we realized based on conspiracy facts rather than conspiracy theories that the false narrative is absolutely untrue.
And how about yourself, Dan? How did you come to question 9/11 and what was your background prior?
I'm 75 years old and I started flying 56 years ago in 1968 at age 19. First as a civilian, then I got in the Navy for 10 years. And finally with the United Airlines in 1978, where I flew for 25 years. So all totaled over a 35-year career span, I flew 20,000 flight hours in 15 different aircraft. And I'm not telling you that to be bragging about my credentials, but only to make the statement that with all my experience, with all of Doug's experience, we could not have flown the 9/11 flight profiles, and neither could the alleged Muslim hijackers. We were lied to. So when they came out and told us that they were mainly trained in light single-engine airplanes, Cessnas, that was a turning point for me that said, no, that's something's wrong here. And it wasn't until, we'll get into talking about it, but it wasn't until I discovered a device called the Uninterruptible Autopilot in 2006. That was my aha moment when I realized how they had pulled this off.
Now, some people have posited remote controlled planes based on the G-force data alone, especially when you look at the Pentagon in particular. Obviously, that building is much lower. The last turn it makes seems like it would be impossible for a human pilot. And on top of that, you have it clipping several light poles when in instances we've seen wings touch much I would say less dense objects, and it causes a crash right there. There's no going forward and piercing buildings after the fact, yet that does not seem to have happened on 9/11. Then you go into the backgrounds of these hijackers and who they were telling us were the quote-unquote lead hijackers. Hani Hanyor, in particular, is somebody that seems completely and totally inept to be flying any type of a large-scale airplane. Yet all of these things were told to us without question. Also, again, that these things were hijacked with nothing more than box cutters. Yet we also have drills going on that day of hijacked planes simultaneously as these attacks are happening. And it is now really an open secret, something that's been talked about in government hearings and in the media alike, that there were many phantoms, in other words, fake hijackings that were fought that day that would have distracted our good military that would have tried to respond to this. So we've got to take a quick break for the headlines. When we come back, I want you guys to hit on those things point by point, and then talk about this technology that you think was utilized during the attacks. It is TNT Radio. We're with 911pilots.org, and we'll be back after this.
What brings you here?
News entirely.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, in an interview with Politico, asserted that Russian influence has deeply infiltrated the U.S. political system and significantly affected the global information landscape. Russia's Federal Security Service is reported capturing a Ukrainian Special Operations soldier, Evgeny Gorin, during a failed infiltration attempt by Ukrainian commandos from the 73rd Naval Special Purpose Center.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
And we are back with 911pilots.org, Captain Dan Hanley and Captain Doug Green. I hit on a number of points before the break. Doug, let's go to you. Let's talk about the hijackers, and let's then also talk about these flight paths and why they would be impossible for the people that they blamed.
Well, you know, Jason, I'm actually quite impressed at your knowledge of the G-force capability of airplanes. And, you know, fighter-type aircraft, you can sustain, you know, a significant number of Gs because there's stress for that. But, you know, in most wide-body jets, and I've flown both the 757, 767, and currently flying the Boeing 777, and the delimitation for positive Gs is 2.5 Gs. And negative is minus 1.0. That's what flaps up. So to think for it, and keep in mind, Jason, that the airplanes, it was reported that they exceed the max structural airspeed of about approximately 110 knots. You know, I just flew a flight to Washington recently, and I was actually taking note of, you know, our max, our VMO or MMO speeds. And, you know, at altitude, it was about 200, right around 280 knots at the high altitude we were at. But at sea level, it would be much greater. And so if they were exceeding the max limit airspeed, they were almost going supersonic, breaking the speed of sound. And they were literally probably rivets were popping out of the airplane, you know, as they were, you know, on these ridiculous profiles. So subsequently, it's absolutely impossible that they could have pulled that off with a couple novice pilots at the helm. The wingspan of the 767 is approximately the width of World Trade Center Building 1. And so to hit that target precisely, maneuvering that way at those high rates of speed, the cornering velocity of the airplane such that no pilot, even an experienced pilot, could pull that off. So, you know, I'm completely convinced, as Dan is, with the research that we've done, that they utilized the Boeing uninterruptible autopilot, and they simply put the coordinates in the flight management computer, and somebody else was controlling their airplane with the Boeing uninterruptible autopilot.
So let's go to you, Dan. Let's talk about this technology, because one of the technologies I was aware of after 9/11 was Global Hawk technology. And this is a type of technology where you take over a plane, even a large scale commercial one, remotely. How does that coincide with the software that you think was used?
Well, that is the software, because the advanced navigation system on today's modern commercial jet aircraft is derived from cruise missile technology, and it's extremely accurate within 1 to 2 meters of what's programmed into the box. So it would have acted like a cruise missile once this system was programmed the right way. If I could step aside for just a second, Jason, and talk about 911pilots.org, because our purpose is to show that there were no Muslim hijackers controlling the aircraft, but that the aircraft were electronically hijacked and remotely controlled through employment of the system we're talking about, the uninterruptible autopilot. And what it does is take complete control of the aircraft flight management computer, which is the brains of the aircraft, and the autopilot, and guides the aircraft to where it's been, wherever it's been programmed to guide it, whatever information's been uplinked into that computer or downlinked from another airplane or a satellite. And once this system's engaged, the pilots can't disconnect it. But this remote technology goes back 80 years ago to 1944, when towards the end of World War II, the U.S. Army Air Corps launched Operation Aphrodite in Europe, in England to be specific. What they did was gutted out old B-17 bombers to lighten the weight of the aircraft and loaded it up with 30,000 pounds of Torpex, which is a highly incendiary compound. Pilots were required to make the takeoff, but once they got airborne, they were remotely guided. They bailed out of the airplane, the pilots did, and they were remotely guided to targets in Europe. This is 80 years ago that this technology existed. I could jump ahead 40 years to talk about another test, but due to time constraints, I won't go into lengthy detail about this system. But we know that it was patented in 2006, and you go, wait a minute, that was 5 years after 9/11. That's correct. That's officially when Boeing and Honeywell patented this system. But we know from inside informants who have come to us from who have worked on the aircraft, or in one example, someone that worked for Raytheon who came forward with information as well. We know it was produced and developed and produced in the mid-90s prior to 9/11. So we know this technology exists. It was patented and it existed prior to 9/11. And we say, given the flight profiles, the speed, altitudes flown and everything, that the only viable alternative explanation as to how these aircraft hit their targets precisely on their first attempt, all three of them, was through the employment of this system. If I could, real quick, I don't want to cut you short, Doug, but if I could go in, you mentioned Hani Hanjour, if I could go into the flight profile and what happened at Congressional Air Charters with him, because it conclusively proves that the FBI and the 9/11 Commission lied about him.
Yes, please do.
Okay. Well, American 77 took off from Washington Dulles, heading for towards the West Coast. It got the cruise altitude for a while, did an about face, started a descent, and at 7,000 feet, it commences this 330-degree accelerating, descending, corkscrew turn. And this was the trick: to ride precisely at the surface, just a few feet off the surface, at over 500 knots, without skidding the surface, and to strike the Office of Naval Intelligence on his first attempt. Now, what's wrong with this picture? Well, this same maneuver was replicated in a simulator and flown by highly experienced pilots who had crashed the simulator trying this profile. But it gets better, Jason. 1 month prior to 9/11, Hanjour goes to the freeway airport in Bowie, Maryland, and wants to rent a Cessna 172, a single-engine prop job. And they wouldn't rent him the airplane because he went up not on one evaluation flight. You don't walk into an airport as a stranger without them proving you can fly. So they usually take you up on an evaluation flight, but he went up on three evaluation flights with two separate instructors who both came back and told the chief flight instructor, Marcel Bernard, who I talked to personally, who confirmed this story, and they wouldn't rent him an airplane because he couldn't handle it, a single engine Cessna. So what does Hanjour do? He goes down the road to Congressional Air Charter, another fixed base operator, and supposedly went up flying with a pilot named Eddie Shalev, who came back and said he was a good pilot. Now, the FBI and the 9/11 Commission sent people out to interrogate all four of these pilots, the three at the Congressional Air Charter and Eddie Shalev. And yet, in the 9/11 Commission final report, only Eddie Shalev's testimony that was taken not under oath stated, and it was just an end note in the final report, that stated he was a good pilot. So this information was known by the FBI. It was known by Philip Zelikow at the 9/11 Commission, and yet it was never made public.
Philip Zelikow, there's a winner. Go ahead.
Here's a picture for your audience. You can see this is the actual profile that they're suggesting an inexperienced pilot that has no experience in a wide-body jet. He'd have to fly so low above the ground, the engines would just be above the blades of grass. Absolutely impossible. Dan and I couldn't pull this off, much less an amateur. Right.
Not to mention that the Pentagon is probably the most surveilled building in the world and the most surveilled city in the world, and we have zero videos on it. Yet when you peel back the surfaces, a multitude of videos was rounded up by the Department of Justice in the aftermath of the attack. We got to take one more break. When we come back, we're going to continue to hash it up with Dan and Doug from 911pilots.org. You're not going to want to miss it. More TNT Radio after this.
Sometimes life can be overwhelming, and suicide may seem like the only way to relieve the pain. Beyond Now is an evidence-based app created by Beyond Blue to help you cope when suicidal thoughts start to appear. You can use it to create an easy-to-follow plan that is personal to you and includes steps like know your warning signs so you can act early, make your environment safe by removing harmful items, activities you can do or people you can be with to distract yourself from suicidal thoughts, reminders of things that make you feel strong. Some of these steps might be tough to fill out, and that's okay. It can be helpful to make or share your safety plan with a trusted friend, family member, or mental health professional. You might feel like you're alone, but help is available. If you're worried you can't stay safe, use the red telephone icon to call your emergency contacts. Download the free Beyond Now app today to create your personal safety plan.
We are for pets. We do anything for them because they do everything for us. We are for people, for those who love pets unconditionally. We are for good, from adoptions and veterinary care to disaster relief and fighting pet hunger. We stand together to create a better world for pets and families in need. We are PetSmart Charities, for pets, for people, for good.
Clear and concise. This is the Jason Burma Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
And we are back kind of behind the scenes during the commercials. We were just talking about Philip Zelikow. And for those that don't know, he headed up the 9/11 Commission. But more recently, they didn't do a real government investigation into the COVID-1984 nightmare. But you did have some political establishment hacks along with media hacks that made their own little commission up once again, headed up by Philip Zelikow. And if I can just hit on the remote aspect of this and past uses by the U.S. military, Operation Northwoods is often discussed because this was an instance back in the 60s where you had almost to the highest levels of our government, went up to Jack Kennedy himself, in which they would cause a false flag attack, not just with a remote-controlled commercial aircraft that would have fake names and fake funerals after the fact. Listen, I'm not saying that's what happened here. That's what the plan was there. But they would also have another remote-controlled aircraft dressed up like a Russian MiG, and it would be that aircraft that shot down the other one, and there you have an event that pops it all off. When we talk about the flights in the United States, my question to you guys is, do you believe that these flights were the original flights and then taken over remotely and flown into the buildings? Or is it possible that they were replaced with separate airplanes, which is what I posit, and we really don't know what happened to the commercial aircraft? I'll let you go first, Doug.
Well, in my humble opinion, I don't have emphatic evidence to substantiate it, but in my humble opinion, I think it was a tail swap. You know, one of my former colleagues that I flew with, his name's Mark Flagg. He was a former Navy F-14 pilot, and his father, Bud Flagg, who was a Naval Reserve admiral, but he contemporaneously flew as a senior captain in American Airlines. He and his wife, Darlene, were supposedly on American 77. And Mark Flagg, his son, who used to be my first officer on the 757, 767, He was responsible for instituting, pushing for the federal flight deck officer program, the armed crew member program, of which the government vehemently objected against, despite the fact that, the flight deck, the false narrative alleged the flight deck was breached. If in fact it was breached, they would have supported such a program, but it took almost a large percentage of the airline industry pilots to threaten to shut the industry down if they didn't support the program to allow us to defend the flight deck. And Mark told me, in so many words, it didn't happen the way they said it did. And I know. I'm not sure if he signed an NDA, what he knows, but I've always believed to this day that it was a tail swap. Many people believe maybe they flew some of the planes out over the Atlantic Ocean or maybe diverted to Stewart Field, which was very close by. And the planes launched at the same time, and it was a tail swap. And reports on the ground from some of the people that saw the plane, especially the Pentagon, had said it did not appear to be an airline paint scheme. And also, if you noticed, Dan has excellent video, especially on 911pilots.org. It shows the 767 hitting the North Tower, and it appears to have an elongated pod on the bottom of the airplane. There is no pod on the 767. I've done many walk-arounds of it, and there is no such pod. It just doesn't exist.
A lot of people have contested that, but I've gone through every single video, and there are five, not one, not two, not three, five separate videos from all different angles that show that device underneath the second plane that hits the World Trade Center. And I would say that it's about the size of an airplane engine, and it does not look like an optical illusion. Popular Mechanics and others tried their best to debunk that. But I would say that that may be the smoking gun evidence that, in fact, the planes used were not the commercial airlines that were posited to us. And I think another piece of important evidence that points in that direction is that we have video evidence that two doomsday planes, E-4Bs, were on the site of the attacks before they happened. Obviously, the Pentagon has been discussed more than the World Trade Center, but again, on several videos, just as the second plane strikes, you can clearly see that another mobile nuclear command center, an E-4B, is above the towers on the opposite end of where that plane is hitting. And then you have that E-4B, and several of them were in the air that day for these drills prior to the attacks happening in Washington, D.C., flying over just after the attacks there. Dan, do you have any perspective on the E-4Bs that were used that day?
No, I really don't know that much about it. There's a friend of mine named Mark Gaffney that wrote a book on them, but I've never read that either. But mentioning the videos that you've seen on the pod, from what I understand, I've seen them, the four photos by CNN and three independent photographers all showed the pod on the bottom. And those photos were sent over to Spain where Spanish photographic experts examined them and said, no, they weren't doctored because it was too grainy, the photographs. And it wasn't a shadow of an engine on the fuselage, that the pod was actually there. And as Doug mentioned, there's no pod on the bottom of a 767. It's smooth. So I tend to agree. If those photographs and that film you saw are legitimate, it was not United 175 that hit the South Tower. Now, you talk about an airplane swap. Both American 11 that hit the North Tower, I believe this is true, and United 175 that hit the South Tower, their flight path overflew Stewart Air Force Base. And some believe that that's where the swap could have taken place, that a drone aircraft took off via remote control and swapped out with the other aircraft. But it depends upon if you've read Rebecca Ross' book. She believes it went up to Westover Air Force Base in New England, and they were required to make phone calls on the ground before they were snuffed. Or you want to believe Captain Phil McConnell, who claimed the airplanes may have been taken out over the ocean, blown up, or Dr. Jim Fetzer, who claims they were flown to Chicago. But the challenge there is to prove what you're saying. And I don't know if anybody's come forward. I conclusively prove that the airplane were taken to those places I just mentioned.
I would have to agree with you, and I've listened and watched videos and audio presentations on all those. Very familiar with the phone calls that were made, CeCe Lyles amongst them, and the theories that have been positive. But we do have a lot of physical evidence, right? The Pentagon, right, in particular, a lot of people have looked at that and questioned whether or not a commercial aircraft could have crashed into the Pentagon due to the lack of debris. There was very little debris on the outside of the building. The holes that were in the building were quite small before the front facade went down. The exit hole that seems to have pierced three rings of the Pentagon also does not look like it would have come from a fuselage or even a punch out of an engine. In the Pentagon case in particular, what do you think about the physical evidence that we've seen in the aftermath of that? And we'll let Doug handle this one.
Well, you know, I viewed some video on this, and but what I was told and what I saw through research on several other videos is that witnesses on the ground actually saw an airplane, but the flight path was completely different than the false narrative. And at the last minute, it appeared that the plane popped up, just did a tail swap, popped up and flew over the top. And then shortly thereafter, there was the explosion. So it's been the thought that it's very possible that it was some type of a ballistic missile that was shot into the building of some sort. And then the airplane popped up at the last minute. And there was also word that there was an EC-130 orbiting in the area, basically involved in this procedure and tracking the whole situation. But there was people on the ground that actually gave very significant reports that the flight path that they suggested the plane took was not even close, came from a different direction. So I think it's highly unlikely. I think it was probably hit by some type of a missile of some sort, from the evidence. And as you said, Jason, very well stated, the entry of the hole into the building was not large enough. And then the exit point for it to go through three layers, these airplanes, they're not as solid as a missile. And for them to go through three layers, you know, if you look at how thick the fuselage of the airplane is, it's highly unlikely that would have happened, given the width of the building itself. It's completely unrealistic. But for me, I think, you know, one of the most significant pieces of evidence we have is, one, the lack of knowledge that most people, especially the American people, have of World Trade Center 7 falling 8 hours later. I mean, I'm sure we'll all agree that United 93 was destined for World Trade Center 7, but didn't make it to its target. And we all know that there was explosives, that controlled ordnance that was planted in the elevator shafts of all the buildings. All the buildings had significant complications that were related to this scheme and all the players involved, and they wanted to destroy the evidence. And they were all three owned by Larry Silverstein and Frank Lowry, who took the leases out with the Port Authority. But just the fact that the NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, suggested that World Trade Center 7 fell as a result of an office fire is preposterous. I mean, given the location of World Trade Center 7 to World Trade, the Twin Towers, World Trade Center 1 and 2, and that fact that it fell 8 hours later, the airplanes were the distraction. The airplanes were going to ignite the explosives, the controlled ordnance, that explosive ordnance that was planted in the buildings. But that's why it took 8 hours after the Twin Towers fell before World Trade Center exploded.
Before I get into Building 7, because, you know, obviously I've done a lot of work on Building 7. We're the guys that interviewed Barry Jennings that was actually blown up on the 8th floor coming down from the 23rd floor with Michael Hess, the city corporation council and the right-hand man of Giuliani at the time. I tried to contact Hess. His office did not get in touch with us. Barry Jennings did. We went down. We interviewed him. He had the key to the city. His story was well documented. After he gave us our interview and we put that out, I put it in Fabled Enemies. He was dead by then. I'm pretty sure he died before we put out Loose Change Final Cut of Fast Acting Leukemia, but not before he recanted his entire story on the BBC. Really That year at the anniversary at 9/11, I ran into that BBC reporter asking him if he'd heard from Barry, because we had not in months. And he pooped, oh, he's fine. No, he was dead by then. Just want to point that out, people. And then when you talk about the Pentagon, we interviewed a ton of the eyewitnesses there. Bob Pugh was the first journalist on the scene. Took about an 11-minute plus video prior to the facade collapsing. We interviewed him, had lunch with him. He didn't see any evidence of a plane or any debris there. Again, one of the first people on there. And we also interviewed Lloyd England, who was the cab driver who had one of the poles, the light poles that was supposedly clipped by 77, fall into his cab and the front window. And he was a rather wild interview as well, because he swore up and down the plane was there and then it wasn't. And just a couple odd notes on Lloyd England. His wife was an FBI agent, and in that car, he had photographs of that car from that day with the pole still through it. In the back seat of his car was David Icke's Children of the Matrix book. So just let that one fly wild for everybody. When we talk about World Trade Center Building 7, a lot of people don't understand that this was a hub for intelligence networks and three-letter agencies alike. So you had the SEC there, you had the Central Intelligence Agency, actually, the Secret Service. The Central Intelligence Agency had the largest office outside of Langley in Building 7, and of course the Office of Emergency Management, which had this large command center that had been recently built, and that's why Barry Jennings and Michael Hess were there in the first place, because Giuliani and the crew were actually there earlier in the day prior to evacuating. And one of the reasons that Building 7 was supposedly not included in the initial 9/11 report, and people were very upset about that, that would lead to the NIST report, is they said there was no loss of life there. That's a bunch of Johnny nonsense. That's not real. On tape, Barry Jennings said specifically when they were in the lobby, he was stepping over bodies. And you know what it's like when you're stepping over people. So we have been lied up and down about this event. More and more people who are mainline or on the cusp of going alternative from the mainline in media are now mentioning Building 7. But I would posit, hey man, might be a little too late right now, because our constitutional republic is pretty much done sauce. And I would say that 9/11 is that cultivating event that takes us into the next level of this track, trace, database, surveillance state that we are currently under, and that continues to expand. So we've only got a few minutes left. Doug, I know you wanted to talk about some of the changes to the system after 9/11 and what it's done to the flight system in general. So go ahead.
Well, you know, we have to ask ourselves. Go ahead, Dan. Sorry.
Go ahead, Doug. No, you go ahead, Doug.
What we have to ask ourselves is why, who's behind this and why? Now, and what's changed in the United States of America? Okay. And what's changed, it's taken, in my opinion, it's taken place over decades. It's been a well laid out plan, assault on our country. You know, if I had more time, I'd give you a quote from Benjamin Mielikowski. I mean, well, that was his real name, Benjamin Netanyahu, before his family changed it. So they would appear to be Semites from the Gulf region, but they're not. They're from Poland, just like the rest of the Knesset. They are from Eastern European countries, Australia. Mark Regev is his mouthpiece. But nonetheless, who's behind all this? Where's the real occupation? It's not in Palestine. It's in the United States of America. And it's existed ever since the inception of the Federal Reserve, the assassination of John F. Kennedy, then they killed his brother, you know, and the list goes on and on and on. You know, they took the U.S. dollar off the gold standard. You know, they blew up the U.S. They destroyed the USS Liberty, and they actually shot at our sailors in the life rafts, you know, the Israeli Air Force. They are not our allies. They're an enemy of the United States of America. And Benjamin Mielikowski said it's a golden calf, or we're going to suck it dry until it's a welfare state that we'll control and we'll manipulate. And that's exactly what's happened to our country. It is not the United States of America. it's the United States. I'm sorry, in my opinion, the United States of Israel or the Zionist organization. There's a lot of good Jewish people out there. So nothing to do with Zionism because it doesn't represent Judaism. It's a political ideology. It's not a religion, Zionism. So I think this is where we're at. And and this is a well-played out plan. And it's continued to what we see right now, a premeditated plan with October 7th. And Isaac Herzog came over just before October 7th and he greased the skids in front of the United States Congress before it happened.
Well, let me just say this quickly about October 7th. It hasn't been largely reported, but we did have United States Special Forces in the region that day, already working with the Israelis on exercises. We sent more after the fact. Netanyahu's quote after the fact in 2009 is, "We are benefiting from one thing, and is that the attacks of 9/11 and in reference to Israel." And if you want to find out some of the Israeli role, I've got a 20-minute section in my film, Fabled Enemies, about their participation in 9/11. Thank you guys for joining us. 9/11pilots.org. Go check them out and continue to check us out. We'll be back with the second hour of the show after this.